Chapter 7. Tom comes home. Tom was to arrive early in the afternoon, and there was another fluttering heart besides Maggie's when it was late enough for the sound of the gig wheels to be expected. For if Mrs. Tulliver had a strong feeling, it was fondness for her boy. At last the sound came, that quick light bowling of the gig wheels, and in spite of the wind, which was blowing the clouds about, and was not likely to respect Mrs. Tulliver's curls and cap strings, she came outside the door, and even held her hand on Maggie's offending head, forgetting all the griefs of the morning. "There he is, my sweet lad. But, Lord ha' mercy, he's got never a collar on. It's been lost on the road, I'll be bound, and spoilt the set." Mrs. Tulliver stood with her arms open. Maggie jumped first on one leg, and then on the other, while Tom descended from the gig, and said, with masculine reticence, as to the tender emotions, "Hello. Yap, what, are you there?" Nevertheless, he submitted to be kissed willingly enough, though Maggie hung on his neck in rather a strangling fashion, while his blue-gray eyes wandered toward the croft, and the lambs and the river, where he promised himself that he would begin to fish the first thing tomorrow morning. He was one of those lads that grow everywhere in England, and at 12 or 13 years of age look as much alike as goslings, a lad with light brown hair, cheeks of cream and roses, full lips, indeterminate nose and eyebrows, a physiognomy in which it seems impossible to discern anything but the generic character to boyhood. As different as possible from poor Maggie's phiz, which nature seemed to have molded and colored with the most decided intention. But that same nature has the deep cunning which hides itself under the appearance of openness, so that simple people think they can see through her quite well, and all the while she is secretly preparing a refutation of their confident prophecies. Under these average boyish physiognomies, that she seems to turn off by the gross, she conceals some of her most rigid, inflexible purposes, some of her most unmodifiable characters. And the dark-eyed, demonstrative, rebellious girl may after all turn out to be a passive being compared with this pink and white bit of masculinity with the indeterminate features. "Maggie," said Tom, confidentially, taking her into a corner, as soon as his mother was gone out to examine his box, and the warm parlor had taken off the chill he had felt from the long drive, "you don't know what I've got in my pockets," nodding his head up and down as a means of rousing her sense of mystery. "No," said Maggie. "H, how stodgy they look, Tom. Is it Marl's marbles, or cobnuts?" Maggie's heart sank a little, because Tom always said it was oh good playing with her at those games, she played so badly. "Marls, no, I've swapped all my marls with the little fellows, and cobnuts are no fun, you silly, only when the nuts are green. But see here." He drew something half out of his right-hand pocket. "What is it?" said Maggie, in a whisper. "I can see nothing but a bit of yellow." "Why, it's a new guess, Maggie." "Oh, I can't guess, Tom," said Maggie, impatiently. "Don't be a spitfire, else I won't tell you," said Tom, thrusting his hand back into his pocket and looking determined. "No, Tom," said Maggie, imploringly, laying hold of the arm that was held stiffly in the pocket. "I'm not cross, Tom. It was only because I can't bear guessing. Please be good to me." Tom's arm slowly relaxed, and he said, "Well then, it's a new fish line, 2 new 'uns, 1 for you, Maggie, all to yourself. I wouldn't go halves in the toffee and gingerbread on purpose to save the money, and Gibson and Spouncer fought with me because I wouldn't. And here's hooks. See here, I say, won't we go and fish tomorrow down by the round pool? And you shall catch your own fish, Maggie, and put the worms on, and everything. Won't it be fun?" Maggie's answer was to throw her arms round Tom's neck and hug him, and hold her cheek against his without speaking, while he slowly unwound some of the line, saying, after a pause, "Wasn't I a good brother, now, to buy you a line all to yourself? You know, I needn't have bought it if I hadn't liked. Yes, very, very good. I do love you, Tom. Tom had put the line back in his pocket and was looking at the hooks one by one before he spoke again. And the fellows fought me because I wouldn't give in about the toffee. Oh, dear. I wish they wouldn't fight at your school, Tom. Didn't it hurt you? Hurt me? No, said Tom, putting up the hooks again, taking out a large pocket knife, and slowly opening the largest blade, which he looked at meditatively as he rubbed his finger along it. Then he added, I gave Spouncer a black eye, I know, that's what he got, by wanting to leather me. I wasn't going to go halves, because anybody leathered me. Oh, how brave you are, Tom. I think you're like Samson. If there came a lion roaring at me, I think you'd fight him, wouldn't you, Tom? How can a lion come roaring at you, you silly thing? There's no lions, only in the shows. No, but if we were in the lion countries, I mean in Africa, where it's very hot, the lions eat people there. I can show it you in the book where I read it. Well, I should get a gun and shoot him. But if you hadn't got a gun, we might have gone out, you know, not thinking, just as we go fishing, and then a great lion might run toward us roaring, and we couldn't get away from him. What should you do, Tom? Tom paused, and at last turned away contemptuously, saying, But the lion isn't coming. What's the use of talking? But I like to fancy how it would be, said Maggie, following him. Just think what you would do, Tom. Oh, don't bother, Maggie. You're such a silly. I shall go and see my rabbits. Maggie's heart began to flutter with fear. She dared not tell the sad truth at once, but she walked after Tom in trembling silence as he went out, thinking how she could tell him the news so as to soften at once his sorrow and his anger. For Maggie dreaded Tom's anger of all things. It was quite a different anger from her own. Tom, she said, timidly, when they were out of doors, how much money did you give for your rabbits? 2 half-crowns and a sixpence, said Tom, promptly. I think I've got a great deal more than that in my steel purse upstairs. I'll ask Mother to give it you. What for? Said Tom. I don't want your money, you silly thing. I've got a great deal more money than you, because I'm a boy. I always have half-sovereigns and sovereigns for my Christmas boxes, because I shall be a man, and you only have 5 shilling pieces, because you're only a girl. Well, but, Tom, if Mother would let me give you 2 half-crowns, and a sixpence out of my purse, to put into your pocket and spend, you know, and buy some more rabbits with it? More rabbits? I don't want any more. Oh, but, Tom, they're all dead. Tom stopped immediately in his walk and turned round toward Maggie. You forgot to feed him, then, and Harry forgot? He said, his color heightening for a moment, but soon subsiding. I'll pitch into Harry. I'll have him turned away. And I don't love you, Maggie. You shan't go fishing with me tomorrow. I told you to go and see the rabbits every day. He walked on again. Yes. But I forgot, and I couldn't help it, indeed, Tom. I'm so very sorry, said Maggie, while the tears rushed fast. You're a naughty girl, said Tom, severely, and I'm sorry I bought you the fish line. I don't love you. Oh, Tom, it's very cruel, sobbed Maggie. I'd forgive you, if you forgot anything. I wouldn't mind what you did. I'd forgive you and love you. Yes, you're silly. But I never do forget things, I don't. Oh, please forgive me, Tom. My heart will break, said Maggie, shaking with sobs, clinging to Tom's arm, and laying her wet cheek on his shoulder. Tom shook her off, and stopped again, saying in a peremptory tone, Now, Maggie, you just listen. Aren't I a good brother to you? Yes, sobbed Maggie, her chin rising and falling convulsively. Didn't I think about your fish line all this quarter, and mean to buy it, and saved my money o purpose, and wouldn't go halves in the toffee, and Spouncer fought me because I wouldn't? Yeah, and I low love you so, Tom. But you're a naughty girl. Last holidays you licked the paint off my lozenge box, and the holidays before that you let the boat drag my fish line down when I'd set you to watch it, and you pushed your head through my kite, all for nothing. But I didn't mean, said Maggie, I couldn't help it. Yes, you could, said Tom, if you'd minded what you were doing. And you're a naughty girl, and you shan't go fishing with me tomorrow. With this terrible conclusion, Tom ran away from Maggie toward the mill, meaning to greet Luke there, and complain to him of Harry. Maggie stood motionless, except from her sobs, for a minute or two. Then she turned round, and ran into the house, and up to her attic, where she sat on the floor, and laid her head against the worm-eaten shelf, with a crushing sense of misery. Tom was come home, and as he had thought, how happy she should be, and now he was cruel to her. What use was anything, if Tom didn't love her? Oh, he was very cruel. Hadn't she wanted to give him the money, and said how very sorry she was? She knew she was naughty to her mother, but as he had never been naughty to Tom, had never meant to be naughty to him. Oh, he is cruel. Maggie sobbed aloud, finding a wretched pleasure in the hollow resonance that came through the long empty space of the attic. She never thought of beating or grinding her fetish. She was too miserable to be angry. These bitter sorrows of childhood. When sorrow is all new and strange, when hope has not yet got wings, to fly beyond the days and weeks, and the space from summer to summer seems measureless. Maggie soon thought as he had been hours in the attic, and it must be tea time, and they were all having their tea, and not thinking of her. Well then, she would stay up there and starve herself, hide herself behind the tub, and stay there all night, and then they would all be frightened, and Tom would be sorry. Thus Maggie thought in the pride of her heart, as she crept behind the tub, but presently she began to cry again at the idea that they didn't mind her being there. If she went down again to Tom now, would he forgive her? Perhaps her father would be there, and he would take her part. But then she wanted Tom to forgive her, because he loved her, not because his father told him. No, she would never go down, if Tom didn't come to fetch her. This resolution lasted in great intensity for 5 dark minutes behind the tub, but then the need of being loved, the strongest need in poor Maggie's nature, began to wrestle with her pride, and soon threw it. She crept from behind her tub into the twilight of the long attic, but just then she heard a quick footstep on the stairs. Tom had been too much interested in his talk with Luke, in going the round of the premises, walking in and out where he pleased, and whittling sticks without any particular reason, except that he didn't whittle sticks at school, to think of Maggie and the effect his anger had produced on her. He meant to punish her, and that business having been performed, he occupied himself with other matters, like a practical person. But when he had been called in to tea, his father said, "Why, where's the little wench?" And Mrs. Tulliver, almost at the same moment, said, "Where's your little sister?" Both of them having supposed that Maggie and Tom had been together all the afternoon. "I don't know," said Tom. He didn't want to love Maggie, though he was angry with her, for Tom Tulliver was a lad of honor. "What? Hasn't she been playing with you all this while?" said the father. "As she'd been thinking oh nothing but your coming home." "I haven't seen her this 2 hours," says Tom, commencing on the plum cake. "Goodness heart, she's got drowned," exclaimed Mrs. Tulliver, rising from her seat and running to the window. "How could you let her do so?" she added, as became a fearful woman, accusing she didn't know whom of she didn't know what. "Nay, nay, she's none drowned," said Mr. Tulliver. "Why, you've been naughty to her, I doubt, Tom." "I'm sure I haven't, father," said Tom, indignantly. I think she's in the house." "Perhaps up in that attic," said Mrs. Tulliver, a-singing and talking to herself, and forgetting all about meal times. "You go and fetch her down, Tom," said Mr. Tulliver, rather sharply, his perspicacity or his fatherly fondness for Maggie making him suspect that the lad had been hard upon he little un, else she would never have left his side. And be good to her, do you hear? Else I'll let you know better. Tom never disobeyed his father, for Mr. Tulliver was a peremptory man, and, as he said, would never let anybody get hold of his whip hand. But he went out rather sullenly, carrying his piece of plum cake, and not intending to reprieve Maggie's punishment, which was no more than she deserved. Tom was only 13, and had no decided views in grammar and arithmetic, regarding them for the most part as open questions, but he was particularly clear and positive on one point, namely, that he would punish everybody who deserved it. Why, he wouldn't have minded being punished himself, if he deserved it, but then, he never did deserve it. It was Tom's step, then, that Maggie heard on the stairs, when her need of love had triumphed over her pride, and she was going down with her swollen eyes, and disheveled hair to beg for pity. At least her father would stroke her head and say, "Never mind, my wench. It is a Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.